This episode of Addiction, an Hour with Hour, is brought to you by Gaming Laboratories International. GLI is a world-class testing, inspections, and certification company committed to delivering the highest quality land-based, lottery, and iGaming testing and assessment services around the world. GLI provides suppliers, operators, and regulators with expert guidance for navigating the future of gaming and ensuring gaming innovations meet regulatory standards with confidence in more than 710 jurisdictions. For more information, visit GamingLabs.com. Hello and welcome to another action-packed, blockbuster, explosive episode of Addiction, an Hour with Hour. I may have been slightly over-egging the podcast there because mostly we are talking about addiction in all of its forms with academics and researchers from around the world and from many, many different disciplines. I'm one of your hosts. I'm not actually an expert in anything, I don't think, apart from possibly horror movies between 1977 and 1994, maybe. I'm John Bruford, joined by your other host, who is an expert in many things. He's a doctor, and not just any doctor. He's Dr. Michael Auer. He's got a podcast named after him, I'll have you know. Dr. Auer, hello.
Hello, John. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm buzzing. I'm just pleased to be here. I'm just happy to be alive today.
Oh, see. Manic face today, huh?
Maybe I've just had a week of limited sleep thanks to moving house.
Okay.
And to anybody that's eyeing up that other house and thinking, oh, it'd be really nice to live there, don't do it. It's not worth it. But we do have a guest today, I'm delighted to say. I'm about to mangle her name and her title and where she works. Maybe English should be a verb. I'm about to English them. I'm about to make a real mess of these. So we are joined by Dr. Guillaume Rogier, Associate Professor of Clinical Psychology at Unicamillus University, Rome. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for hosting me.
Sure.
I Englished
it. Have a great time. You're not Italian, Guillaume, are you?
No, I'm not Italian, and I want to say sorry for the audience because of my French accent, because I'm French, but I'm working in Italy, in Rome.
Okay, so how is that, you know, in terms of French and then learning Italian, are there similarities?
Yes, there are a lot of similarities, and when I came in Italy, in Rome. I was very lucky because I learned my Italian with little children. So I had the possibility to learn the basic vocabulary, but there are a lot of similarity. Basically, you just need to put A or A at the end of the words.
And The reading is similar, right? So there are lots of words that look similar on paper, but you pronounce them differently in French.
Yes, the pronunciation is much more complex in French. So maybe for Italians, it is more difficult to learn French, but for French, it is quite easy to learn Italian.
You hear that, John? There's hope for you, no?
Dude, I am... There is a reason why the English are the laziest country in the world when it comes to languages. Partly it's down to how the education system works, and partly, unless you find yourself in the middle of Russia or the middle of China, you can generally find somebody that speaks English wherever you are in the world. They might be pretending they can't. So I live in Wales. Which in French is, hang on, it'll come to me. Écosse is Scotland. Wales will come to me. So if you go to a pub in North Wales, Everybody will be speaking English. And you go to a bar, and as soon as you speak with an English accent, everybody will switch to speaking Welsh. It's good. It's good. It's. I think England is one of the world's most loved countries. I'm kidding, obviously. Oh, we're terrible people.
So, Guillaume, I came across your paper. That's when, you know, I contacted you and, you know, luckily you agreed, which is titled Academic Paper, Gambling, Gaming, Shopping and Social Media Addiction, The Role of Materialistic and Hedonic Values. Yeah. What can you tell us about the paper and what drove you to study this hypothesis?
Where the idea of study came from?
Yes. And what's the paper? Oh. What's the conclusion? What did you find out?
Okay, so first jumping to conclusion. Okay, so the conclusion mainly. I think that the study draw several types of conclusion because we can see the study as a two-step study with two main hypotheses. The first hypothesis was focused on the possibility to identify different profiles of addiction risk according to the type of addiction in the population. So the first aim was to see if these different type of potential addictions were associated and which type of co-occurrence between these potential addiction we may find in the population. So this was the first step of the study. And the second step of the study was to try to identify if we can find some common psychological variables that are common to all these types of addictions, but also if it was possible to find some other variables discriminating between these type of addictions. So this is why it is I describe it as a two-step study. In the same time, the study was conducted because of the conclusions of previous study I conduct with my group research and the lab of Patrizia Velotti, and that was focused mostly on gambling, but also on use of social media, and some previous conclusion focusing on the role of personality, narcissism, and emotion regulation, regulation of positive emotion on their role in this type of addictions. So it was an additional exploration of this line of research.
So and, in this, sorry, go ahead.
No, I don't know. I can also go more in depth regarding the results we obtain.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Because, I mean, the way this works, I mean, for the listener who is not familiar, you find a sample of, in this case, adults. You recruit, where did you recruit them, your sample?
So the sample was recruited in the general population. Because we were interested in investigating these behaviors not only among people who show clinical levels of addiction, but also subclinical level of these behaviors. That is, behaviors that could be considered problematic because maybe associated with some damage. So we recruit a sample of adults, and so the sample was quite large because we recruit more than 350 adults, if I remember well. And we ask them to fulfill a battery of self-report questionnaire that are questions asking them to self-describe their behaviors regarding gaming, regarding gambling, shopping, and the use of social media. And we also ask them to fulfill some questions that allow us to measure the psychological variables we were interested in. These were, as the title indicates of the paper, materialism, hedonic orientation, and financially self-concept. And having then all of these data, we used a specific statistical analysis that allowed us to identify profile of, let's say, behavioral addiction, the population. So first of all, we use this technique that help us to understand how the levels of addiction were present in the population, and if some groups in this population were exhibiting some height level in several addiction or only one addiction and so on. So we identify several profiles. And what we found is that fortunately, the widest group was presenting low, what we call the low risk profile, that is a low level of all addictive behaviors. And this group was quite balanced by gender, if I remember well. And then we identify two other groups that instead showed a high level of addictive behaviors. But these two groups were slightly different because one group showed high level on every addictive behavior, every of the four addictive behavior, while, and this group was mostly male. And the other group was characterized by levels of use of social media and high levels of shopping behaviors. And this group was mostly female, if I remember the results.
The shopping.
Okay. Yes. And shopping. Yes, yes. So this was the first result, the first interesting results.
One thing, I mean, there is this, you call them transdiagnostic variables. So what you actually assessed in the population, like materialism, which makes sense, right? You know, in terms of, I mean, I think everybody can imagine that that might play a role in shopping addiction, gambling addiction, financially focused self-concept. I think that's also kind of self-explanatory. And then you have a word I never heard before. I'm sure, John, you have. It's called eudaimonism versus hedonism. Can you explain a bit more detail what eudaimonism versus hedonism means?
Yes, I will try to replicate the good pronunciation on this concept. So basically, this construct described our preference in the way we, let's say, conceptualize happiness and the way we think happiness should be reached. And what previous line of research in mainly social psychology observed is that people differed in the way they think happiness could be reached. And in particular, some more focus on immediate gratification, immediate pleasure, that will be the hedonism facet of the construct, while instead other maybe also more oriented toward a spiritual values, mostly conceptualize happiness as the self-realization, so pursuing self-growth and meaning in life. And typically these two ways of trying to reach happiness are viewed as two polarities of a continuum, so that you can be more oriented toward one aspect instead of the other.
So hedonism, hedonist takes a shortcut to happiness. They just buy it or buy a product, and the other on the other continuum, you work towards happiness.
Yeah. So this could be the behavioral correlates of this orientation. But what is very interesting, in my opinion, and the reason why we decided to study this construct, is that the construct mirrors the value of the person. So it might be the reason why some people maybe are more impulsive and show more dysregulation upon positive emotion, okay? But it's a psychological variable that is not only behavioral, but also deeply rooted in the cultural background of the individual.
So I assume that high score on hedonism was also correlated with a higher prevalence of problematic shopping, problematic gambling, social media use, right?
Yes, yes, all right. This result was not new and was greatly expected because other researchers already observed this. And what we found is that the two risky profiles I told you about before were both characterized by high level of hedonism and low levels of I don't know how to say it.
Eudaimonism. Eudaimonism.
Yes. I mean, and on the contrary, the low risk profile are the inverse profile, the inverse pattern of results. So, what we found is that all individuals showing one of the two risky profile show these characteristics. So it seems to appear as what we call a potential transdiagnostic variable that is a common soil for these behaviors.
And that sample were Italian adults, I assume, right?
Yes, the sample was Italian. Yes, it could be interesting to think about potential future cross-cultural studies. For example, exploring if the role of these partially cultural rooted variables is similar in different across different culture. It might not be the same. And it could maybe also explain why maybe we observe different rates of some addictions across culture. Also because we know that all countries are not characterized by the same value, of course, and some are more oriented toward hedonistic values, such as, for example, the occidental part of the world.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you mentioned before that the percentage of people, I mean, in your sample, that reported addiction was really low, right? Most people didn't show any indications of problematic gambling. But that's not, I think that's logical, because the prevalence of problem gambling or problematic shopping is, what is it, like 2% in the adult population or something like this?
Yes. Yes, so we did not, because most of the instruments used to measure addictive behaviors rather than addiction were not associated with any cutoff. So we did not explore the level of addiction of addictive of clinically. The number of diagnoses in our sample. But what we could say is also something else that I think is very important, and different researchers are moving and shifting towards a new paradigm in addictive behavior. That is related to the fact that despite maybe a small quite small percentage of individuals satisfy the criteria or the cutoff to be diagnosed as addicted to specific behaviors. We also know that a lot of individuals not satisfying these criteria also show several harms related to these behaviors. The same reasoning we could have with, for example, alcohol. So quite a percentage of people luckily are diagnosed with an alcohol use disorder, but at the same time we know that also if you don't do not satisfy the criteria for this diagnosis, you can anyway experience some form of harms related to this behavior.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it just becomes then like extremely difficult to study, the criteria that you mentioned before, because those are, of course, individual. Like, do I have a hedonistic, attitude towards life, or am I very money driven? And you're just, watering the concept, because you might drink a glass of wine every night and your partner is anti, alcohol and sort of suffers from psychological harm because you are having your glass of wine. But then it becomes quite difficult to study, psychological aspects of that, because it's not just you who has the problem, or you don't actually have the problem. You don't score high on any of the scores, but other people feel that they are harmed by your behavior.
Yes, yes. And this is also related to a really fascinating other field of research, that is the question of the harms and the level of problem in your behavior should be evaluated only by you, by yourself, or also by your significant others. So it's also a very interesting perspective.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think that this suggests that we should, of course, study psychological variables explaining, accounting for diagnosis of addictive behavior, but also study the general population.
Yeah, no, I mean, we had this discussion before, about addiction. Mm-hmm. And in fact, only gambling disorder is something that's described that's recognized by the DSM-5 or the ICD-10, but shopping or gaming are not even recognized as disorders, mm-hmm. let alone as addictions, because there isn't even the concept of the addiction there when it comes to behavior. But I also saw, I came across another of your papers, which title I also find fascinating. And the title says Narcissistic Implications in Gambling Disorder, the Mediating Role of Emotion Dysregulation. Like what's that paper about? Like how does narcissistic behavior sort of come into play when it comes to gambling disorder?
So the idea of investigating the topic of narcissistic variables in gambling disorder came up from two aspects. One, from a personal clinical experience, and the other, more important, I recognize, came from several theory, especially psychodynamic theories on gambling disorder. And one of these theoretical line argued that a failure, an early failure in a narcissistic development in individual may account for the development of gambling disorder. And this was coherent, in my opinion, with the observation of a lot of data associating low self-esteem with gambling disorder. And the idea was that people who experience harm in relation to gambling are difficult to stop and to gain control over their behavior, and are prone to chase their losses. So the question was, what could be the motivation behind this difficulty to regulate on behavior, why it is so difficult for these individuals to accept the fact that they lost their money and to stop engaging in harmful behavior. And the idea that the gambler will see and interpret loss as the sign that is not self-worthy, is losing his own sense of personal value, could explain why the gambler has difficulty in accepting the loss, of course, because if you lost money and you only lost money, it could be difficult to accept.
Yes.
You will accept it if you lost money, but this means that losing money is losing your personal value. Of course, nobody would be prone to accept it. Mm-hmm. And this is why this was also a first thesis that led me to investigate the role of materialism, because it led me to question me on the role and the meaning of money for individual engaging in harmful gambling behavior. That is, if you view money and materialistic good as the way to increase your personal levels of self-esteem, you will be automatically more prone to find a way to quickly increase your personal materialistic success. But at the same time, you will be more vulnerable in the case you will lose money, because it will be more difficult to accept. So it was related for me.
Yeah, makes sense. No, I mean, I think it's very interesting, because what, you know, I haven't thought about, you know, psychodynamic concepts, psychoanalytics, because where you're coming from is, I mean, just, you know, for the listener here or for John, psychodynamic, like Freudian, you know, Carl Jung, you know, Alfred Adler, those guys are regarded as, you know, psychodynamic school of thought, right? Gyun, is that correct?
Yes.
And
yes.
And there, of course, there the train of thought is very much originates in the childhood, in your early experiences. Whereas when we talk about, like, you know, behavioral aspects, conditioning, you know, learned behavior. It's a lot about triggers, you know, it's a lot about you learn a behavior, you learn to connect, let's say, gambling with, you know, sounds, with an environment. And it's something, you know, you can get hooked on through these kinds of connections.
Thank you for talking about this. I will try to maybe explain this aspect that is quite complex. And maybe what could help us is to referring to a specific theoretical model that has been developed by Blazinski and Nowher. Maybe you already talk about this very famous model, that is a Betway model, that conceptualize that conceptualize the heterogeneity of the psychopathological trajectories that could lead to gambling disorder. And this model is very useful also because it proposed a wide array of factors that could explain why and how people developed and maintain gambling disorder. And one of the class of these factors is what you described before, that is what we called in psychology processes related to the conditioning, to the behavioral conditioning of the individual. That is the fact that, for example, because of structural characteristics of the game, people learn that some stimuli related to the game are associated with pleasure or are interpreted as a good probability to win money, for example.
But so, hold on a second, okay? So you teased the Alex Blazinski and the Nowher's pathway model for the development of gambling. Then can you also maybe quickly explain the three pathways that they are describing?
Yes. So one of these pathways is this one that is mostly related to learning processes, linking structural characteristics and specific gambling features related to the structural characteristic of the game, but also maybe the environment related to the game and the casino and the learning of a dysfunctional habit. And this is one of the pathway. The second type of individual with the gambling problem, according to this model, view the fact that individuals also learn to use gambling as mostly a way to regulate a negative emotion, that is to escape from negative emotion. And usually this type of individual with gambling problem also suffers from some type of mood disorder such as anxiety, depression, and so on. And of course, in this case, we can also find the impact of learning processes such as in the first category. So it is an additional risk factor, if you want, that we can. And lastly, in the last category, we find the role of personality traits, and especially what we call antisocial personality trait, so that gambling is contextualized within a broader dysfunctional behaviors that are related also to deviant context and criminal tendencies, with also individuals who show a high level of impulsivity. And we find often, according to this model, the co-occurrence of personality disorder. So I would like to say that empirical support for this model is only partial, but anyway, I think that it is very useful for us because it can help us to disentangle the complexity of the risk factors accounting for gambling problem, showing that we can, at a first level, at a more superficial level, observe the role of conditional learning and learning processes and the impact maybe of structural characteristics and so on. But that also in most of the case, and especially in most of the case which do not recover in a spontaneous way and who maybe can also resist to psychoeducational treatment, we also find the role of co-occurring disorders such as mood disorder, personality disorder, and these are likely to be rooted in risk factor related to the early childhood and the development of personality, the development of the capacity to regulate emotion. So these types of problem gambling are more likely to be related to a broader psychological problem that should be treated to recover from gambling with success.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree. I mean, we talked about this before. The comorbidity is a major factor when it comes to problem gambling. And what you are emphasizing here are, you know, psychological aspects, you know, personality disorder, mood disorder, or anything like that, which are there most likely from the very early stage in a person's life. And at some point of time, and I think that's the train of thought, in order to regulate their emotions, they develop like an unhealthy habit that might be gambling, that might be drinking, or, you know, social media, shopping, you know, or any other type of consumption.
Yes,
John,
exactly.
Can you relate to that? I mean, I'm not...
Yes, I can. As we may have touched on in previous episodes, I have had abusive relationships with many things in my life.
Not with me, okay? Just to make that clear.
It depends how many times you ask me a question like that. But I was thinking, you know, when you were talking about personality disorders and things, I was thinking of sleep disorders as well. Which, you know, while it is a very different thing, but it has such a profound effect on every aspect of our mental health. And one of the many things that we find in disordered gambling practices is very often somebody will be staying up really, really late. Or their natural rhythms are disturbed. Mm-hmm. It's interesting when you started talking ages ago, Guillaume, you were talking about common variables of different addictions. Mm-hmm. Because I can't remember who I asked this, Michael, but I asked somebody recently, like, is just being addicted to stuff. Is that a thing? Is there a common thread through these things that would need to be treated or recognized in order for all addiction treatment to be more efficacious, to be more potent? You know, mm-hmm. And I mean, are there threads that run through all addictions that you've looked at? This is a strange. So, like Italy as a country, you know, loves its sports big time. Some mm-hmm. sports significantly more than others, but you know, cycling is obviously massive. Football is absolutely huge. Rugby is growing, but I'm wondering what the data will look like after another year with a World Cup, with Italy not in the World Cup.
She's French. I mean, you know.
No, I know, and France are among the favourites for the tournament. But does the sort of the tribal loyalty of team sports, international and clubs, does that influence wagering? Emotionally, I think it must. But has that been studied? Like, do Italian gambling addicts gamble differently when Italy is not in the tournament?
So I'm not aware of specific studies on this aspect regarding gambling.
I'm just throwing it out there for you guys.
It's definitely the case. I mean, if your local team, your nation's team, is not competing or whatever, kicked out early in the tournament, the revenue is lower. Definitely.
Right, but the disordered patterns.
Yeah, but I don't know how it came. I can't really connect the threads here, how you connected, our nice discussion about, psychoanalytics and psychodynamics to wagering.
I'm the only non-doctor in sports betting.
I mean, pay attention to what
I'm you, the only non-doctor the here, so my brain here. My brain goes where it goes, dude. I don't have your academic background. I haven't had the creativity beaten out of me in the classroom.
Nobody beat me, okay? Nobody beats me.
But it is, anyway, interesting because maybe it will also help us to differentiate what is social gambling from non-social gambling. And I'm not aware of specific studies and the practice of gambling and the sport wagering related to the fact that the personal team is playing. I guess that obviously it is related, but I would expect that it will be related to higher level of general gambling and social gambling, but I'm not sure that this will be automatically related to higher level of problematic gambling.
Yeah.
Sensitive discussion. No, but do you think that, I'm not talking to you, John, of course, talking to expert here, that there are commonalities like personality trait in terms of other mental health aspects in terms of the developing an addiction like you said before, because the pathway model obviously doesn't just apply to gambling but to any other addiction.
Yes. So it is not a personal belief, but we know because other researcher made a great work in investigating this issue, testing the syndrome model of Schaffer, who conceptualized well this possibility. That is, this model posits that all addiction are accommodated by similar genetic and psychological vulnerability factors, and that the type of addiction you develop mostly vary according to the opportunity the environment provides to you. And so that because this model is highly powerful in terms of preventive action, as John was suggesting before, if I understood well, because you can tailor preventive action on one psychological variable common to all addictions. So it is highly powerful because potentially your intervention has a great impact. So several researchers try to identify some common factors, and we know, for example, that from also neurobiological and genetic point of view, addiction profiles show some similarities. It is not my field of research, so I'm not expert on this, but there are very good papers of, for example, Potenza on the topic. And we also know that some personality traits are common to different addictions. So, for example, a night level of impulsivity. But at the same time, I think that the question is much more complex, because when you look to a single addiction, to a single addictive behavior, what you find is a great heterogeneity. We just make the example with the pathway model of gambling. So each individual with gambling addiction is not similar to the other one, okay? We have a great heterogeneity in the same addiction. At the same time, and this is likely to be true in for each type of addictive behavior. At the same time, these profiles seems to be similar across addiction. So, for example, the profile model of Blazinski and Noer, positing that you have a profile that is only conditioned by learning processes related to structural characteristic. Another, which is more likely to engage in addictive behavior because of mood disorder, and another one who is more likely to engage because of problem in personality, is a picture that show you the heterogeneity within the gambling category. But at the same time, this profile could also be common across the different addiction type. So maybe you will find this kind of profile in each addiction type. And when you look to the literature who identify different profile, for example, in substance use disorder, in alcohol use disorder, you will find that these profiles are slightly very similar despite the different type of addiction. That is, in the complexity, in the heterogeneity, we have similarity across addiction type. I don't know if I...
Yeah, sure. John, you followed?
Sorry, I wasn't sure if I was allowed to speak. Because I'm not an expert on anything.
What? Yeah,
okay,
sorry.
You are approved.
So the idea that for each type of addictive behavior, you have, let's say, different profile. So, for example, only learning conditioning process due to structural characteristics. Maybe another profile, which is typically engaging in the addictive behavior to escape from negative mood, anxiety, and depression. And another one who is more related to personality problem, height, impulsivity, and so on. I'm not telling that these are the profile, just to make an example. And what it is interesting is that you will find this profile in the population of individuals suffering from alcohol abuse, the population of individuals suffering from substance abuse, the population of individuals suffering from excessive gambling, from excessive social media use, and so on. So what we can say is that perhaps, my idea is this one, is that perhaps we have common variables across addiction types, but across different profile. So we have this profile that are common, that is, the heterogeneity is common to every addictive behavior.
Yeah, I wonder if, so you might have these different markers, different criteria. And say there's a set of six or eight or 10 or whatever that are things that you commonly see out of all of these different addictions. And people might score differently on each part of that.
Mm-hmm.
According to, say it's a combination of analyzing their actual practical behavior and their self-reported behavior, because that would be a really interesting mixture. And then you could compare those figures across both the demographic, their same demographic for general population problems, but also addicts for those same problems. And then you could refine it further and add in other layers. Am I going mad here? Because you two are the researchers and I'm not, clearly not. But does that make sense? Like, so you're checking out the commonalities in the broader population, but also the risk in the broader population. Admittedly, that's making an assumption about that data. It's making an assumption that that data is relevant to the addiction.
No, I mean, it makes sense. Because, I mean, we had this discussion with Mark Griffiths, right, about what he thinks are the criteria of an addiction, you know?
Yeah,
but this, what you know, what we are bringing up here, what Guillaume is talking about, goes even deeper into the personality to say.
Well, it's looking at the individual.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, individual, exactly, yeah. And I mean, for sort of, it's of course interesting because, so if we then think about, okay, what could, let's say, a industry do, like a legal one, right? I'm not talking about illegal drugs, but let's say gambling or whatever, you know, alcoholic beverages to protect. Of course, they can't protect from individual characteristics, right? If a person has, you know, a mood disorder, if they, you know, are kind of, you know, on the narcissistic spectrum, etc. What you're gonna do about this, right? Nothing, you know, because you can't sort of tailor your product around that. You know, what you can do is you can say, okay, I wanna, you know, change the event frequency of my product, like Guillaume said. Okay, structural characteristics, right? They can say, okay, the slot machine should only run every 5 seconds, right? You shouldn't be able to play every second. You should only be able to play, you know, every 5 seconds. That's happening in regulation. Or you should only be allowed to wager €1, £1. But that's going to help to some degree. But on the other hand, you know, if a person comes along with all of these aspects in terms of their predisposition, then, you know, they're going to develop a harmful relationship if the opportunity arises, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. I must agree with what you said. And first of all, so I think that maybe we were talking about also two different things. That is, one aspect is the common features across all addiction, as Mark described, that is the way addiction problematic behavior manifests. And the other is common risk factors leading to addiction. And what you said about the fact that it is not possible to monitor personal vulnerability, it is true, mostly true. But I would also say that we know that specific population are vulnerable. For example, we talk about self-esteem, self-concept, value, and emotional regulation. And for example, we know that adolescents are especially vulnerable, not because they are suffering of some disorder, simply because they are still developing this function. So for example, we should be aware of which are these psychological variables that are likely to predispose to problematic behavior, so that we could also know that some populations, such as, for example, youth, are more vulnerable, to protect them also from a policy's point of view. Mm. And maybe we could also use it to make more responsible marketing. For example, I was thinking about some behaviors of influencers who promote gambling, but also trading with cryptocurrency that is thought to be another potential form of gambling, and who are doing self-promotion of themselves, vehiculating the idea that money is the way to have success and to be loved by the other, and so on. And maybe this could help to tailor better the messages we are sending to especially the young population. So maybe industries could know about this risk factor to not target these psychological variables in their marketing campaigns.
Agree.
Well, I'm hardly going to argue because I've got two experts in front of me. I've already been shown my place today.
But, you know, I mean, I enjoy...
Any objection is welcome.
I enjoyed the session.
It is a personal opinion.
Because we talked about slightly different topic, you know, psychological aspects and predispositions, risk factors.
I must apologize to you experts because I have to cut this. I have to bring this to a close now because we're not quite on an hour, so our listeners might feel a little bit cheated. I don't know if you know this, Guillaume, but the name of the podcast is An Hour With Hour. I'll put some pictures of you online or something to keep the fans happy.
Okay. I didn't understand maybe. What to keep the fan happy?
Pictures of Michael. You know, have you ever seen those pictures of Vladimir Putin where he's riding a horse and he's got his shirt off? I've got similar pictures of Michael.
It's all AI. It's all AI. No, you know, it's not real. No.
Dr. Rogier, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Guillaume.
Thank you.